the show.
Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Very pleased to be with you. We have got a great show today. Make sure that you stay for the entirety of the show because our Q&A at the end, our inbox question, is with Counselor Danny Huerta on the subject of bachelor parties. So you're going to love it. And then our culture segment, many of you have been anticipating this forever and ever and ever, and it is my interview with Jim Bob and Michelle Duggar. So they were in the studio, love them. They were just the sweetest things ever. If you did not see my eyes appearance on 19 Kids and Counting, you need to go back and find that on TLC because my eyes were in view, the mic was blocking the rest of me, but Boundless Show was featured. We're in the big time.
That was a nice plug.
It was good. Yeah, it was a good time. So speaking of good times, we are here for our roundtable, which is going to be fantastic. Let me run around and introduce, I'm not going to literally run, but introduce the panel here, and then we'll talk about our topic. Thomas Voss is back. Thomas, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Hollywood. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Very pleased to have you at the table. Carrie Kintz, welcome, Carrie Kintz.
Thanks. It's been a while, Lisa, so thanks for having me back. I'm glad to be back.
Oh, there's Martha at the end of the table.
Hello.
Very exciting. And you've got kind of a blingy shirt on today, I'm going to say. It's sparkling in the lights. She's got a little sparkle on her.
It's true. When I'm driving my car, it like goes on the ceiling and it's
probably her very own disco ball.
Martha gets crazy on Fridays. You never know what she may wear. She just looks loose.
We're going to have to post a photo now because it's really not that crazy.
Now she's like worried about her reputation. So very excited to introduce our next guest. His name is Brian Malloy. Brian, welcome.
Thank you, Lisa. It's exciting.
Fun story with him. He is visiting in town from St. Louis, was driving through, wanted to just stop and say hi to Focus. He posted on Facebook, and I'm like, don't just stop here. Come and at least visit us. And then I'm like, I'm not going to have him just visit us. I'm going to make him be on the show. And so within a few hours' time, he has become a guest on the Boundless Show. It may happen to you folks. You come and visit us. You don't even know what I may do with you. That's all I got to say. Very true. You may be on the show. You may be taking pictures with us. You may be, it's all craziness. So Brian, very thrilled to have you.
St. Louis native. Okay. Sunset Hills, Missouri. Wow. Sounds like Hollywood, but it's not.
Okay. Yeah. And working with Kanakuk Camps.
Kanakuk's Ministry of K-Life Ministries. It's their year-long ministry for kids.
Mm-hmm. Love them. Love Joe White, who was on our show not too long ago. If you did not hear that show, please Google it and find it, because he said some great stuff on mentorship. Mm-hmm. So, and last but not least, the wonderful Megan Panareski. Megan, welcome.
Thank you, Lisa.
Okay, speaking of Megan, this is her show. She produced this entire show. The segments for it came up with the topic, and so I want you to kind of introduce our topic and how you came to think about this and think it would be a good topic for discussion.
Sure. Well, it first started a couple weeks ago. I was having a discussion with one of my guy friends about Facebook and modesty and women's swimming suits, and he was very concerned when he saw some of his female friends who had posted pictures of themselves on Facebook in bikinis. And basically, he asked me, when a Christian girl does that, what is going through her mind? And even for me, some of the swimsuits that I've wore, it might be easy for a Christian girl to be taken aback and think, well, I can wear whatever I want to wear, but sometimes there are issues like the purity of our brothers in Christ at stake here, and it got me thinking, you know, what else might I be doing that I don't even think about that might be causing somebody else to stumble, or there might be an opportunity for me to glorify God more if I did something differently, or just what is it that we easily miss, or even common habits among Christians that it's common because of culture. It's become part of Christian culture, and we don't think twice that maybe there's another option.
Right, and I think that's a great point. I mean, I think that we're all in the midst of a, you know, we live within our culture. Most of us do anyway, wouldn't you say, Thomas? Are you in the culture?
Me?
You're a separatist.
Yes.
We all are.
He seceded from the culture.
We are all influenced by our culture. And we know that there's been a cultural slide, and that has affected the church. It's affected Christians to the point where individuals, as well as Christians within the church, young adults within the church, are succumbing kind of to that slide, in a sense, the cultural slide. And so, but there are some things, I think, and we can delineate here, there are some things that are illegal and we shouldn't be doing. Then there are some things that are moral. There are some things that are immoral that we shouldn't be doing. And then there are things that are questions of, ethics or maybe some grayer areas and maybe areas that are wisdom areas. And we're going to put them on the table today. And really, the question that I want to ask, because I don't want to come out, you know how I love to just come out with guns blazing and just tell people what to do.
No, really?
I know, it's a shocker.
I've cried after many a boundless
but instead, but instead, I want to throw this question out for you, because we have had, I was very shocked in church over the past few weeks. We have been studying Esther. And our pastor one day decided that he was going to tell us that Esther caved into the culture. And I have always heard it preached and taught that Esther just stood up and she was so strong and for such a time as this and all this. And he said, you know, for her to exist within the king's harem and within that culture, she had to give up some stuff. It would have had to happen. So she did cave on some of the Jewish customs, some of the religious rituals, some of the things that probably would have been towing that unclean line. And he said she probably slept with the king. He just put it out there before she became queen in order for him to consider her acceptable. And so I was shocked by that. And I thought to myself, and he compared her to like a Daniel or the other dudes, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who did take a very hard stand. And ultimately, we know Esther did. But the question is, these defining moments that we have where we stop and we look and we take stock of where we are, and maybe it's something glaring that we're doing wrong. Maybe it's something where it's just a wisdom issue and we're like, wow, should we really continue or not continue in this behavior? And maybe there are some things that we just have intuitively where we know this is something I've always been very hardcore about. This is something I'm very convicted of. This is something that where I really, it really has been an opportunity for me to have conversations with friends over. So I'm going to throw it out and let's start discussing. How does your life as a Christian look different or not? If you didn't speak, would folks be able to tell you're a Christian by the life choices you make in entertainment, in your commitment to church, modesty, speeding, language, illegal copying of music, internet usage? And what are the standards you're hardcore about? And on what things are you too slack and compromising?
I think I've been a pretty hard worker a lot of my life, but since I've gotten to college, I have noticed that my ability to focus and to meet the standards that I think my professors actually wanted me to live up to has been difficult. And I think that it's partially because I find myself in a college culture where sometimes that's the mindset among students, like, you know, we're here to graduate or things like that. And certainly not all of them, but I find that influence over me. And I have just kind of realized this in the last several weeks and realized, wow, my discipline level needs to go up and I want to do my best when I get back to school in the fall. And yeah, so that's something that I'm wrestling with right now.
So you're kind of saying like the culture to just get by, to get the grades, make it right out of there, whatever, and not necessarily give it your all as long as, you know, you're doing what you need to have something on paper.
Sure. And yeah. I always thought that was the kind of person I was. And I was almost blindsided to realize, wow, I've been slipping a lot in this area.
Mm-hmm. I hear that. And I kind of wonder, what does the world, I mean, what do they need to see a difference? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, in a Christian realm, you might say, well, you don't drink, you don't smoke, you know, like those different things. But I wonder if people in the world have the same list of criteria of what would make you look different. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I think that we a lot of times put too much stock on that whole like, oh, I don't drink, I don't smoke, or I do. But yet really it's the way we love other people. And, you know, I think that, you know, we put those stipulations on what it looks like to be or not be a Christian, what the world would expect us to do. But a lot of times, like you said, the world doesn't have the same expectation for us that we have for ourselves. So a lot of times that we have to reevaluate, like, okay, how can I show people Christ otherwise? How can I let Christ live through me? And I think a lot of that does with how well we love people, the way we handle hard stuff, the way we overreact or don't. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, those are the things I think that they see when they see genuine Christians and they're like, wow, that's interesting. Even if they don't like us, they're still interested.
And I think that's a great place to bring in the idea of motive, because obviously where your heart is very important. And we could easily have a separate round table on the issue of legalism and how taking any of these things to an extreme is equally ungodly. And so I think it is very important, you know, first of all, for our hearts to be in the right place and then look through that filter of evaluating what we are and aren't doing.
I think it's interesting because when Lisa, you sent me the email about this show, I started thinking about it, and I was praying. I was like, Lord, where are the areas that I know that I've been slipping? And I actually had an example. I had gotten a movie from Netflix. It's called The Town, and Ben Affleck directed it, whatever. And I was watching it as I hit the middle of it. I mean, there was just a lot of language in it, and I just really felt like the Holy Spirit kind of pricked me. I was like, why are you watching this? And it wasn't a browbeating type thing, but why? What is the point of consuming this right now? And so I just took it out of the DVD player, put it back in the sleeve, and sent it back. And I think it was one of those things where it's like, there's nobody around. There was nobody around. It was just me at my house watching this movie. And yet, I think if we don't have integrity in those moments where the Lord's convicting us, then our witness is ruined when we're around people, because then we're not making the stands that we need to in a group of people that might not know the Lord. Mm-hmm. And I think... there, like you said, the legalism thing is a really fine line to walk, because you look at what Paul preached to the people at Athens in Acts 17. He knew their poets. He knew a lot about their culture. He was able to engage them and preach the gospel to them in a language that they understood. And so I think we have to ask the Lord for discernment about how we engage in the culture, how we see what's going on around us. That way we can actively engage and be in but not of. And I think that's the fine line that we have to walk, because I agree, Martha, I don't think the world standards for how we look and act, we shouldn't allow them to measure us that way. It has to be what the Lord has laid down. And I think we can get too caught up in, oh, well, all of these people are watching. Well, that doesn't matter if you're not making the right choices when you're alone and it's just you and the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Is that your justification for listening to NSYNC then, right there?
I have many justifications for listening to NSYNC, Lisa. Like, maybe I was 12.
Okay, getting 12. Like 12 days ago. No, I'm just teasing. But so the movie thing, getting back to that, do you have like a standard across the, do you have some kind of standard, arbitrary or not, that you apply to movie watching, or is it a case by case basis?
It's a case by case basis. One thing that I have been really hardlined on is I have a really, really difficult time with movies that have a lot of sexual content in them. And I know people, we joke about in the Christian culture, like, oh, I'll watch rated R movies because it's only for violence and it's not for this, you know. And again, just trying to be discerning, but sexual content really bothers me. And I've found the effect when I have indulged and the Lord's really convicted me about it is just not only the images in my mind, but I start comparing myself. I start feeling like I have to live up to those standards or lower myself to those standards, or I'm an anomaly in my generation for not living like that. I mean, all of these thoughts and this wrestling I start having, I'm just like, why am I putting myself in this position to listen and consume these things when the Lord's clearly set out his standard for those things, and I don't need to be consuming that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and it's tricky. I mean, even PG-13 movies are horrible now when it comes to that kind of content. And so, you know, and then I find it difficult to try and find things that are good and entertaining and tell good story that aren't also hideously cheesy. And so, you know, I mean to want to watch something and consume something that also kind of stirs my emotion and my intellect, but not in a way that advances my imagination, if that makes sense. And so it's a fine line to walk. I, you know, have I done it right every time? Absolutely not. I've definitely fallen there. But, you know, just being more conscious of the choices that I make. Mm-hmm. So
that's good. I think it's interesting because as I was talking about the show, I was saying how, you know, I was trying to use examples for people and say, you know, like, for example, in my life, like a couple things I do is I have always, growing up for me, it was, as we were saying, Brian, as you were saying, it was very much the, you know, drinking, dancing, language, movie, cards, even Uno was on the line. So, you know, a lot of that.
Wild card.
Anyway, so there was a lot of that, but that has actually kind of given me an internal check for a lot of things I have. So for me, movies, I will not watch a rated R movie unless it has specifically been recommended to me for some reason. Mm-hmm. And it usually is some kind of historical import, and for some reason there's violence in it or whatever. Anything else, I just won't consider. And that's just something I've done. So I do have that. I'm very hardcore about church. And that's another thing growing up, you know, for me that was just ingrained in me is you just... Now, growing up, maybe we kind of towed the line of legalism a little bit. It was like we were always there, and, you know, you just always, and we had dresses on, too. So, but now it's kind of moved to, I just have this idea of, you know, church is important. You should be there. And why do so many people have excuses for not mm-hmm. getting to church? Yeah, I'm just like, especially here in Colorado, it's like, I'm going to go to church as long as I'm not hiking, sleeping, hanging out with friends, doing, you know, I'm just like, what is up with that? Anyway, so I get kind of crazy about that. However, we all know that I love hip-hop music. So, sometimes that has me listening to the radio, which granted, that means I have radio edits, but do I really need to spend a lot of time mm-hmm. consuming music that several words within the song, if not every other word, is bleeped out? I can't even get anything out of this music because it's so bleeped.
That's so edifying.
And to really...
Because it's so bleeped.
It is. And it's just so, you know, and really, I mean, there are some that are just like fun themes and whatever, and some that are just silly. But at the same time, there's a lot of it that just... It's really, for me, like a really what's the point kind of issue. So that's one that I have to call myself on. And I've been thinking about in recent weeks and just saying how I also won't buy it generally because I won't go, especially if the lyrics are explicit. I just won't buy it. Mm-hmm. But then I'm like, so I do this weird dance around like, okay, well, you know, they bleeped out the music. So then I find out that, oh, my goodness, no, it really is in the original version. It's this word. And then they like change the word. And I'm like, oh, I didn't even know that. So it's just all sketchy. So those are a couple of mine. But who else?
Lisa, that just reminds me of, you know, growing up, you have your family around you as accountability. Mm-hmm. If it's the family's rule to go to church every Sunday, it's going to happen. Or if it's don't play cards or don't drink. But when you're out on your own, there's no one telling you you should flip that channel or you need to get up the Sunday morning. It's a whole new realm of kind of setting those rules for yourself. So I think that's a struggle that we definitely face and
deciding. And I think that's great, getting back to Carrie's point about listening to the Holy Spirit, because if the only reason you've ever not done these things is because your parents told you not to, what kind of compass do you have for making that decision ultimately on your own? Which is why we see so many young adults when they're out on their own, everything's chucked out the window and whatever group of friends they're currently with dictates the pattern of their behavior.
And I think for me, kind of tying those two together, you know, I'm from Oklahoma and all my family's back there. You know, I moved to Colorado just on a whim. And so I've kind of eliminated that, oh, we did this every Sunday because we had to, and we did this every Wednesday because we had to, even, you know, calling my mom because she lived down the street. So my church has become my family for me. You know, I've got two families in particular that people will tell you, you know, I've got the Thomasons and I've got the Trobys. I don't know if they want me to use their names, but oh well, they don't care. And they're both like my Colorado families. And I look to them for very specific things, and they're the ones that I kind of use to guide, to keep myself kind of like this family structure. You talking about music and listening to the Holy Spirit and stuff, it's funny because I haven't always had the best viewing options, so to speak. In fact, Gary Troby, the guy who was just referencing his family, he always makes fun of me. He's like, I'm concerned about your viewing habits. And he kind of says it in a joking manner, but it's kind of true. You know, I don't necessarily watch the best things all the time. But for me in music, I've grown up around music and I've grown up just feeding my soul through music. You know, I've played the clarinet for 14 years. I've grown up on the stage. I've grown up in choirs. And I've always had a hard, hard time with any song that references a cuss word or references something sexual. I can't listen to them. I've never been able to, and I never have. So it's that interesting moment of, I haven't drawn a line here saying I'm not going to listen to hip hop or rap, but I just never have. And it's because I've never let myself, like, I've never been able to. And I think it's truly because of the Holy Spirit acting through me, protecting me from that, knowing that I'm fed through music. So why would I want to feed that with something that's not good? Mm-hmm. So
it's good.
Well, I think just like Carrie said, that whole idea of like, you know, is what I'm doing above reproach. You know, like if I can't be above reproach in like tiny little things, like by myself, how can I ever be above reproach in big stuff that people see? You know, like if I want to be a light, you know, like if I want, you know, people to see Christ in me, I can't be, you know, I mean, I'm a human, so I'll make mistakes, right? But but people want to see like a little bit of integrity and that attempt to be above reproach and I don't know, attempt to kind of have integrity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? Speaking into that, kind of going back to earlier when we were talking about what is the world's quote-unquote standard for what's being above reproach and how can they see, I've been on the show before and I've talked about my experience in the theater, specifically with rehearsals through a show I was in around Christmas time. And something really interesting happened during that time. One of the crew found out that I worked at Focus on the Family, and she was completely shocked. She was like, Thomas doesn't work at Focus. There's no way he could work at Focus. And it was because of what she witnessed from me on the wings waiting to go on stage and how I was dancing. And it was maybe a little inappropriate, and she was shocked to find out I actually worked here. So on one hand, I was like, oh, you know, I'm breaking molds and breaking stereotypes that Colorado Springs has for Focus. But on this hand, she shouldn't have been shocked to find out that I actually did work here. Mm-hmm. And so it was this moment for me of, what are you doing? Have you gone too far? And you need to plug yourself back in to stay true to the reason you're here. And that's to always, share light in the dark places. One of my favorite books is Roaring Lambs.
Yeah.
And it talks about, don't ignore media, go be a part of media. If you really want to see it change and have an impact on culture, then you need to be the one doing it. So I kind of beat myself up about that. And how I was handling myself, made a change in an effort. But then while I'm going through this, one of my friends from the theater goes to church with me. And he makes the comment, with your interactions I've seen with you at the theater, I can tell you're a good person. It's his way of recognizing something different about me without knowing how to say it.
Yeah.
So in those moments where we as humans are even beating ourselves down, God is still able to work through us and to share light to somebody who is completely in the dark.
Yeah.
So that, for me to go back to that question is, I don't know what the standards are, because for the crew member, hers was one thing. And then for my friend who went to church with me, it was something completely different. And they both saw something different out of it. So
that's kind of what Carrie was saying of God needs to be our standard more than what one person thinks or another.
So one of the ones that I think is interesting and that came up with someone else I was talking to is the whole idea of music, and there's the whole illegal downloading of music problem, which is flat out illegal, so that's wrong. FYI, anyone that needs to know that. But people kind of walk this very gray line with it. So who has not been to a wedding reception where they've been given a mix CD? I mean, I go to them all the time. Yeah. People just make stuff. They just copy their music, reproduce it. I've had friends. In fact, I had this with one of my friends. She was moving away. She made a CD for me. And I knew, I asked her flat out, I knew that basically she just copied it off of her system and all her stuff. And I said, oh, but did you just copy this? And she's like, well, yeah, what's the big deal? And I was like, but that's illegal. And I chucked the CD, and it was a monumental fight that ensued over this, because all of a sudden I didn't care about our friendship, and I was too crazy, and I was this and that. And it's like, that's not even my personality. My personality is just keep the CD and don't worry about it, and who cares? But I just felt like I had to draw the line on that, because I wasn't okay with it. And I just felt like, artists are out there, they make their money off their music, and it's like, even when you download it, it's like $1 a song, people. Can we not just pay for people's music? I don't know. So that was just another example for me that, kind of came into play. I don't know if you guys have had experiences with that. Other ones like, what about like the concept of clubbing, for example? Because I have a lot of Christian friends who spend their entire weekends out in clubs, and they drink, and maybe sometime, I had one friend that said, I don't get drunk, maybe I just get a little bit tipsy. Okay, well, what's the difference there? I don't know. I mean, does anyone know?
That is, okay, so I love to dance. I love dancing, but I absolutely refuse to go to clubs, because I know that it is going to be an uncomfortable situation, and there's just a lot that goes on there. A lot of the dancing today is, let's be honest, it's essentially simulated sex. People are very close together. There's just a lot of movement that is just not okay. And it's hard for me, because I love to dance. And like Thomas, I grew up in a family that just loved music. That was something that was always a part of my life. In churches where dancing was something that was used to worship the Lord, and just in a very honoring way. And so but that's a line that I've had to draw, is I'm not going to, even though I really enjoy partaking in this and I think it's fun, I'm not going to let myself go there, because I know that that's dishonoring to the Lord. And I think, again, if you're going out there and you're doing that and then you add alcohol to the mix, that just does not seem like the recipe for success, for lack of a better way to put it. My thought is...
Or speaking of recipes, friends of mine who know like the recipe for every cocktail out there, and they're just, it's like, okay.
Yeah. I think you just have to be really, really careful. Like I hope I'm not crossing any boundaries, but I enjoy an occasional glass of wine, but who I have that with is a very close, tight-knit group of friends. And it's one glass. Like, I tell myself, this is what I'm going to do, you know, and set those things in place. And I don't feel like the Lord's sitting over my shoulder beating me to death, you know, but I'm not doing it out in public either, where it's like, I'm going to have 6 or 7 margaritas and it's going to be fine, you know. I know where I would like to imbibe in that and take place, you know, have that happen. And that's the limit that I set for myself. But I'm not going to do it in public where somebody is watching, or I'm very sensitive with the people that I'm with. I have someone very close to me who struggles very, very intensely with alcohol. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to drink in front of them, mm-hmm. you know, even though to me it's one glass is fine. I think it's what I think Paul talked about of, mm-hmm. you know, not doing something so that the younger brother doesn't mm-hmm. stumble. Mm-hmm. So I think it's again, being discerning. And I think that's the thing that the Lord's gone back to me with, is you have to hear my voice. Be led, be discerning, be walking with me. That way, you know, in those situations that you're in, you're listening to my voice, you know. And again, you're right, we're human, we're going to make yeah. mistakes, and it's not always going to be right, but, you know, yeah. to just kind of put those parameters down.
But I think it's like, Lisa, you said my favorite question, like, where's your heart at? You know, like, mm-hmm. where's your heart? Like, if you want to go minister at the club, I mean, that's not, I don't think I would ever feel comfortable doing that, but if you can, awesome. But I mean, what's your motive behind going? You know, like,
yeah.
is it, I mean, even if your motives are pure, you know, you're putting yourself into a place where other people's motives are not pure.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a dangerous thing. So it's that question of, where's your heart at? And like, mm-hmm. what's the motive behind it?
Mm-hmm.
And in the same sense, you kind of, because I have a community of people that I hang out with that their life revolves around going out mm-hmm. and karaokeing and drinking and just staying up all night. And they know that I won't drink around them. But there's also people at this table who know that I do drink around them, mm-hmm. like have a glass of wine in the evening. It's all about, like Carrie was saying, the people you're around. Mm-hmm. On the other side of that, where my heart is when I go with them to these clubs is so I can be with them and, you know, be some type of stability yeah. for them while they're
safe
there.
Safe person, yeah.
Yeah. And on the other hand, I need to protect my own heart in yeah. that sense. While my heart may be there, I don't want to be put in a situation where I let myself,
yeah.
you know, go there. You know, I just read recently, you know, I've been struggling with some things personally, and one, we were listening to a Beth Moore Bible study. Yes, a guy is listening to a Beth Moore Bible study.
Glory.
Woohoo! bless, as Lisa always says. And one of the things that she brought up, which I had never heard before, is that your heart will deceive you, and that God yeah. says that he's Absolutely. Bigger than your heart. And so I go into those situations, and while my heart, the intention is there, but then my heart is also saying, oh, just drink and just have fun, because that's what you really want. I also have to remember that God is bigger than that, and God can overcome that. And so, yeah, I like that, you know, where is your heart? But on the other hand, also make sure you're protecting your heart in this
situation.
That's
true, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I really love how, you know, just in conversation with a few non-Christian friends recently, we have this perception that there are some things that are cool and there are some things that are not cool. And then eventually when you become a Christian or whatever, then you stop doing all the cool things like clubbing and just hanging out all night and whatever. But I have so many non-Christian friends who would just love to be pulled out of the clubs and have dinner at someone's mm-hmm. house. Yeah. You know, it's like a whole, it's like an environment that so mm-hmm. many non-Christians, especially young adults, are not familiar with.
Yeah.
To go to say, come on over for dinner. I'm going to have some of my friends there and mm-hmm. let's play catchphrase or mm-hmm. let's play, you know, and they just think it's like the craziest thing yeah. ever, but they have so much fun mm-hmm. doing that. And it's like, wow, you know, there is something besides getting drunk and going yeah. to strip clubs and doing, you know, and it's such a common practice. One of my friends here works at a hotel here in town, and she was talking about one of her friends who was going through a hard time, and her mm-hmm. other friend's solution for that was to take her to a strip club. And it's just like, oh, we're gonna just forget about it, let's go out and go to a strip club. And she was like, you know, how about if we come over to my place and do stuff mm-hmm. and we can just talk and whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was just such a refreshing alternative for her. So I just thought that was kind of a neat thing that we have this perception that, oh, everyone thinks we're so dorky mm-hmm. and uncool yeah. and whatever. But okay, any other things that someone wants to bring up? Otherwise, I have another
one. Can I just throw one thing in there? And yeah. I think it's on the issue of, we do need to be careful about the situations that we place ourselves in. But I yeah. think as a church and as a Christian culture, we use that as an excuse to completely cut ourselves away from people. Mm-hmm. We use it as an excuse to not engage the culture and engage hurting people around us who don't know the Lord. And so I think that that's just a caution. While we need to be wise. I mean, there's a reason why Jesus used the example, you know, gentle like doves, but wise as serpents. And I think we need to be careful that we don't use it as an excuse to say, well, I'm just going to set myself apart and I'm not a part of this culture and I don't do this, because your example is great, Lisa. There are hurting people out there who need the love of Jesus, and they need people who are real and honest about their walk and about the things that they struggle with, walking alongside them. That's how the disciples changed the world, is they were honest about the sinners that they were, and they weren't afraid to let the world see that. And that's what the world looked at and said, hey, you've been with Jesus. I want to know more about him. Or they were completely turned off and ended up persecuting them. One of the two. But we need to be careful that we don't use our excuse of quote unquote righteousness to not engage the culture and minister Jesus to the people out there who need him. And that's something that I've also been convicted on.
Yeah. And it can be hard when you go to large churches where you can have a self-contained group of friends, or, you know, hello, for those of us that work at Focus on the Family, it's like I go from my house to Focus, to my Bible study, to my church, to my, you know, and it's like, are there any non-Christians out here in any of my spheres? You know, so I have to be intentional about that.
And Carrie, what you were saying, I've heard a wonderful Bible study on that once, on the verse that talks about caring for widows and orphans and keeping oneself from being polluted by the world. And the speaker brought up, a lot of times people jump right to the keep from being polluted by the world part, and they miss the caring for widows and orphans and other forms of reaching out to people that is actually written first in that verse, and that we need to keep our eyes open to.
That's good.
The pastor of our church back home actually reprimands us if we like don't have non-Christian friends. He's like, what's wrong with you? Like, your job is to plant seeds, not be perfect. Go. Like, just make friends with people. He's like, you don't have to hang out with them every night and be influenced, but it's your job to have non-Christian friends.
Yeah. All right, what about language and what the Bible refers to as coarse jesting? What do we think about that? Where does that show up in our selves or our circles of friends?
I mean, working for Canicuc in the summers, like, they have a really strict, I mean, I don't work in the summers anymore for Canicuc, but policy of no coarse joking, because it's so easy for the kids that you're around to see that and be like, oh, it's okay to make inappropriate jokes. There wasn't, I think camp stance on it was, is it necessary? You know, like, if it was necessary, great. If you're going to reach people, great. But is it really? And so they just said no. And I don't know. I think because of being around that so long, and it kind of was made me feel uncomfortable too. It wasn't like my parents let me do that. So you just kind of abstained from it. But yeah, there's just not a whole lot of place for it. And I think it's one of those ways that it might be one of the ways people expect Christians to act, is not be coarse in that way. Or maybe that's something that kind of shows them a little something different. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, they say from your heart is, you know, what your mouth speaks. Yeah. So I think it says a lot about what's inside, you know, of what comes out. So don't do it.
Don't do it.
I think the difference, too, can come in with any of these issues is, and I noticed this before, Thomas and Carrie, when you were sharing your stories, that it makes a really big difference if you're starting from, I love the Lord, now how can I live this out, as opposed to, what is the line that I need to walk? And that's where legalism comes in. And if you're looking for a line, a lot of times I think you'll end up being defensive. But if you're starting from, you know, do I love the Lord, then a lot of times the lines work themselves out, and it's not so difficult to find where that line should be.
It's good. Does anyone else have anything to say before
that? That's true. I've heard that said before, that like when you're I'll botch the quote, but it was like when your heart's been changed by Christ, or it's been changed by Christ's love, all the lines, obligations, they aren't obligations or legalism anymore. They become like that humble servitude of just a humble love for God and to love other people. And a lot of the other stuff doesn't really, it's that Matthew 22 verse too, of that the greatest commandment is to love God and love people, and all the other laws and prophets fall after that. So, I mean, when that's your primary focus, not trying to figure out where the line is, it frees you up so much more. Even though it seems like legalism, it's freedom instead.
And I think we put a lot of emphasis on be holy as your Father is holy, and Jesus said that several times. But what I love when I read scripture, and when I read the words of Jesus, and I read the words of Paul, and just the overarching story of the Bible, is this is a race. It is not a sprint. It's a transformation, and it's continually happening. And that's grace and truth working in all of us. And that's what I just am so thankful for, is, you know what, I'm going to fall down and I'm going to screw up, but I need to get back up. And that's what the Lord is looking for, is, okay, I messed up. He's looking for a contrite heart, a broken spirit, repentance, and getting back up and doing what he's called
me to
do. Well,
and letting him be our Redeemer. I mean, that's what he wants, but we have to let him.
Continually submitting ourselves to him. It has to happen. So
yeah. And I think what's so key, too, is a little bit of what Megan alluded to, and that's the idea of, you know, being so close to Christ and understanding mm-hmm. the heart of Christ and who he was and were we walking with him. You know, I think of, you know, if the disciples were around this round table and they were talking about what that would look like for them, you know, would they, even in today's day and age, you know, it's, you know, what would their habits look like and what would their behavior look like and what would their hearts look like in the midst of that? And I think what you said was great, Megan. It's not about drawing a line and making sure you're on the quote unquote right side of it, mm-hmm. but making sure that everything that you say and do honors God and honors mm-hmm. Christ and honors his word and his ultimate purposes. And I think that's huge. And I think in the midst of that, there are a number of things that we can look at. I mean, there are some things that are just great to set personal goals for in mm-hmm. just examining our own behavior, examining our speech. And, you know, I don't think that there's anything wrong or dumb or that's not just for new believers or that's not, or I'm so, you know, the rest of my life I just, you know, can say I've listened to X number of Tim Keller podcasts so that gives me a license to drop some language here or whatever. I think we all try to walk those lines as well. But just to recognize, you know, everyone that we're around, we don't know where their heart is. We don't know what their story is and what they've lived out. So does it really, are we really ambassadors of Christ in the mm-hmm. way we're conducting ourselves? And so my challenge to all of y'all, not just at the table, but everyone out there, is to really take a few moments this week and sit down and look at your heart. Read some scripture, just pray, ask the Lord, you know, what he would have you change, if anything, in your habits and in the way that you conduct yourself or the way that you speak. And it could be something huge or it could be something small. And don't be afraid. I mean, I do not want to be the only one out there who is rebuking people, you guys, because it is a difficult job and I cannot do it on my own. So we need to be open to correction in the body of believers. We need to be willing to love one another in Absolutely. The midst of saying, you know what, that's just not okay. Mm-hmm. And I have called people, Megan, I'm so glad you brought this up as the original comment, the whole Facebook thing. I have called women on stuff that they are wearing. I have pulled them aside at parties mm-hmm. and said, that is not okay. That is not, I will go help you find something to change into, but that is not okay for hanging out here for the next 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And you just have to be willing to do that. And in the same vein, you have to be willing to receive that. You know, I've mm-hmm. had people tell me that I've said something that's too sarcastic or said, you know, they pulled me aside in the way that I've made a comment or joked about something. And it's something I will never forget because it's done yeah. so rarely, you yeah. know, and we have mm-hmm. to be willing to walk in spirit and in truth more often with one another. So I think it's a good thing. Well, thanks, everyone, for being willing to come and put your stuff on the line. That was very excellent, and I think it's going to be helpful for all of us. And like I said, to you out there, think about it and then write to us, editor@boundless.org, and give us your own thoughts on this discussion and where we can all go from here, not only as a boundless community, but as a community of believers in really seeking to honor God where we are. So thanks so much, Megan, for such a great crafting of a show and a roundtable.
Yay, Megan.
My pleasure.
How can I express the fullness and the depth of what it is that you have done for me? Words seem so small, I can't explain it all. All the joy and love that you bring, I was summoned to the cross. The only thing it cost was surrendering my life unto thee. For what it's worth, I give these feeble hands, and words cannot express the glory you demand, the sacrifice you gave, set all man free. All your conquered sin and death, you did it all for me. I want to live my life totally surrendered unto thee. I surrender. I surrender.
I surrender unto thee. Well, hey everyone, for this week's culture segment, I am hugely privileged to have with me in the studio Jim Bob and Michelle Duggar. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Lisa. We are glad to be here.
Great to have you on the show. It's funny, I was telling you before we started taping how I put a little shout out on Facebook to a lot of our fans, and they said, you're going to
didn't talk to the Duggars. I can't believe it. I'm so jealous. I wish I was there. I love their show. I love watching them. You know, and then they start mentioning, you know, I remember when so-and-so did this on the show. It's kind of like, it's a weird phenomenon because I'm sure people feel now like they're part of your family because they've lived some life with you. And so I'm sure there's that connection, you know, that's probably pretty funny.
Yes, it has been fun. We've met a lot of people that feel like they already know us.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, for those of you who don't know, which, you know, is probably like one or two of you, if that, the Duggars are a family out of the South, down there. You guys, your home
from
currently,
Arkansas,
mm-hmm, currently in Arkansas, and obviously have this show, 19 Kids and Counting. Still counting at 19, right?
Right.
Okay. So maybe we'll have you back, you know, we'll just see if that happens. But and then recently their son Josh, their eldest son Josh, married Anna and they had a little girl, Mackenzie, and now another one on the way, I understand.
Yes.
So very fun and just a fun, neat opportunity, I think, for the world to see kind of your story and your passion for family and for your kids and ultimately for the Lord and just what he's done in your life and in your marriage. And it's just neat. Did you ever think, you know, 20 years ago in your own stories that this would be where you'd be sitting today?
We never dreamed. No, we thought maybe we'd have one or two children or three children, but we never dreamed we'd have this many and that the world would be kind of fascinated with
our accounting. Yeah, but. I mean, just the thought that people would be interested in how we do dishes and laundry, and I would never dream. But I'm a mama, loving on the babies that God has given, and I think it's just amazing to see how He has brought about this wind of opportunity to, as we believe it is, a ministry for our family to make Christ known. And we'll be the first to tell you, we're not a perfect family. We do not have it all figured out. We've got our own little weaknesses and idiosyncrasies in there. And yet we know that we serve an incredible God who delights in showing himself strong when we turn our hearts toward him. And so that's what I think our whole focus is with loving and raising our children, is to encourage them to give every area of their life to God and turn their hearts toward him.
It's so true. Well, I think it's neat because we, you know, as I was saying, introducing you guys kind of to the Boundless audience, we have so many young adults in our audience who are kind of making many of those life transitions into marriage and into careers and finding, establishing themselves in a local church. And we have a lot of discussions on our blogs about, you know, what's a good age to marry? What does that look like? You know, when are you mature enough versus when have you protracted your singleness too long? And what about kids? You know, how do you decide on what, you know, what you're going to do about kids and stuff? And tell us a little bit about your story, because I know it's so unique in the fact that you guys decided from the front end in getting married, even though, you know, you got married relatively young, certainly by today's standards, you know, you decided maybe to wait to have kids. And just tell us how that played out within your own hearts and reconciling it with your faith and all of that.
Okay. Well, when I was in junior high, my church had a dating seminar that I went to, and they explained all about dating, and I was interested in that. But they had us make, you know, two commitments. One is that we wouldn't date anybody that wasn't a Christian. And I thought, well, I could make that commitment. Mm-hmm. And secondly is that we wouldn't date anybody that didn't love Jesus as much as like I did. And so I thought, well, that made sense. And my family had gone through a lot of difficult financial times growing up. And I just really grew in my relationship with God. My mom was really a spiritual leader in our family. Just my dad went to church growing up, but he didn't really have that spiritual focus. And so... But even through the difficult financial times and stuff that we had as a family, as my mom encouraged my sister and I to trust the Lord no matter what we went through, I just saw God provide, meet our needs, got us by. And I was looking for a girl that really had a spiritual focus. And even though from sixth grade on I went to a Christian school, a lot of the girls that even sat in Bible time and in Bible class and stuff didn't seem like they had as much of a spiritual focus. And I was looking for a girl that just was in love with God. And so throughout my senior, all the way through high school, I didn't date. But my mom would go out on church visitation. And a lot of times I would go out on church visitation with somebody from the high school. And one particular Tuesday night, I went to over to the church, and there was a guy there from the Springdale High School, and I went to the Christian school, and we went out together, and we had three cards of people to go see.
And we went to all three houses and nobody was at home. So we just stopped at the side of the road and we prayed about who to go see. And he said, hey, I know this girl that just became a Christian and she's a cheerleader. And I said, well, let's go see her. And it was amazing because...
That's targeted evangelism and witnessing there, targeted church visiting.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, he just happened to know where she lived. And so we went over to her house and the most beautiful girl I had ever met came to the door. And yes, it was Michelle. And we went in and sat in her parents' living room and she had such a... just a hunger to learn about things of God. She had just became a Christian a month before. Mm-hmm. And that night I prayed that I could become her spiritual leader, even though I didn't do the talking. This guy, Fred, did all the talking. Mm-hmm. I just fell in love with this girl. I just felt like that she loved God. She wanted to learn about God. And I thought, Lord, if I could be the one to teach her about God. But yet I was so shy. I was just didn't do
and
any.
He's not kidding because I don't remember meeting Jim Bob at that point, but later when we really did meet, we were talking about this event and I was like, oh, you mean you were the one that came with my friend Fred from school and you never said a word. I didn't even remember meeting him then. But the amazing thing was, is God knew the right timing in my life and in our relationship that there were still a lot of things God was needing to do in changing me in that period of a year. I got saved at the age of 15, and it was like the difference between night and day for me. I didn't go to church growing up, and so I didn't. I mean, for the first time, I started listening to Christian music, and I was like, "Wow, this really means something. The words mean something." And I can remember when I got saved, I went around singing this song, "I'm forgiven. Now I have a reason for living. Jesus keeps giving and giving, giving till my heart overflows." And that's how I felt, even though I didn't know much about God's word, about the Bible, and about His plan for my life. I wanted to know. I was so hungry. And so I just remember I was involved in this boyfriend-girlfriend relationship at that time, right after I gotten saved. I remember I was so excited and wanted to talk about God, but my friend didn't want to talk about the things of God. And that broke my heart because I thought, I really am excited and I want to learn and grow. And I was struggling. And I went to this counselor at our high school. Thankfully, back then, they allowed Christian counselors on campus. And I went to this counselor and I said, I am really having a hard time. My boyfriend didn't want to talk about the Lord and I do. And what do I do? And this counselor wisely said to me, he said, Michelle, have you trusted Christ to take you to heaven? And I said, yes. And he said, well, don't you think that you can trust him with your love life? And I thought, wow, I never thought of it that way. And I said, well, yes, I can. And so I got on my knees that day in that small little office and I just prayed. And the best I knew how, I just said, Father, I give this area of my life to you. And if this is meant to be with this person, you'll work it out in your timing. And if it's not, then I know you've got something better out there for me. But then I prayed, P.S., Lord, please make it easy for me to let go because I didn't want to hurt anyone's feelings. And at the same time, I just knew this wasn't a good relationship. And the Lord, in a turn of events, allowed it to be easy to let go. And then right after that was when I started working at the yogurt shop that Jim Bob's mother was managing.
And I'll take over here.
And he'll take over from there.
He finally decided to step out of the woodwork, I guess. So.
Yeah, what happened was because my family was having difficult financial times, my mom started working and she had to go, got a job managing a yogurt shop. And one day I went to pick her up from work and she said, hey, Jim Bob, she said, this girl came and applied for a job here today. Her name's Michelle Ruark. Do you know her? And I said, yes. I said, you need to hire her. And she did. And then shortly after that, I was getting ready to graduate from high school. And they had a junior-senior banquet coming up. And I went over to the yogurt shop and I was scared to death. But I asked Michelle if she would go to this banquet with me. Mm-hmm. And just about a few weeks before that, she had broken up with the old boyfriend and had given him to God, and God took him away, praise God. And and anyway, she said yes, she would go to this banquet with me, I think just because I was the manager's son.
Oh, but, no. I told him, I said, I see clearly how God had already begun to work in my heart. And so that first time that I remember meeting Jamab and really getting to talk to him, he brought me back to my parents' living room after that banquet. Of course, neither one of us could eat. We were so nervous. You know, we sat there. We couldn't even eat. And then we came back to my parents' living room, and we sat for 4 hours and talked about the things of God.
And one of the first things I showed her was the triangle principle, where it's like God, she's in the bottom corner. Yeah, God's at the top. She's in one corner. I'm in the other. And the closer that a couple get to God, the closer they get to each other. Or the farther away they get from God, the farther away they get from each other.
And that could be individually, each person. You know, their relationship with Christ is what's most important in staying.
And so, really,
to him.
That
it's quite
night,
a first date conversation. You weren't wasting any time.
Right. And I tell you, this will tell this you how table. Naive I was to the things of God. He was talking about the ark at some point in this 4 hours of talking. Okay, I'm thinking the only ark I know of is the ark where all the animals were. But he starts talking about these guys putting this ark on their shoulders on some poles. And I'm going, man, those guys had to be really strong. And then he explained to me, oh, he's talking about the Ark of the Covenant. I'd never heard of it. I didn't know what it was. And I think that night when he left my home, unbeknownst to me, I stood in the same doorway that he had stood a year before, and I prayed and I said, Father, I have never met a man like this before. If this isn't the one you have for me, I can't imagine anything better. And so I think God orchestrated all of that. He knew the perfect timing. And
God really knit our hearts together that night. And
that's right.
And anyway, 19 kids and counting later, here we are.
Yeah.
But we actually, then it was actually after Michelle was graduating from high school a year later, her parents were going to move to North Carolina. And so I hurried around and got a real estate license. I bought a little fixer-upper house. And I went to her dad and asked if he would consider allowing us to get married instead of moving her away to North Carolina. And we were pretty young. It was Michelle was 17, and it was 3 days after I turned 19, and he agreed to let us get married, and we got married July 21st, 1984, and it's one of the joys of my life, and I'm so thankful for Michelle. But when we first got married, we didn't think we wanted to have children right away, and so we put that off, and Michelle had gone on the birth control pill, and another thing that happened is that we went to a Christian counselor, and he encouraged us not to have a TV our first year of marriage. And we thought we could do that. And so for the first year, we just lived on love. And then after the first year, we thought, well, we fulfilled the commitment of not having a TV. And so we went, and someone gave us a TV. We went and got the cable hooked up. And we both were just glued to the television. And we were just staring at it, and that was our life there for about 3 weeks. And we couldn't believe how bad television had gotten in a year, and our communication dropped off, and after 3 weeks, we both realized this was going to be detrimental to our marriage, and so we prayed about it. We ended up pulling the TV out, got rid of it, shut the cable off, and that's really one of the best things we have done for our marriage, and I encourage people to do that.
To go on a TV fast, even, for a week, and replace it. Now, sorry guys, our film crew, Sean, we love y'all so much, and you all have an incredible ministry. You can get DVDs, but that time that you spend on that broadcast TV stuff, sometimes it can pull you away from your family. And so we encourage people all the time, go on a TV fast for 1 week and do fun things with your family. You know, like play games and go do some fun things at the park or make popcorn and do, you know, just crafts. But I think families need to spend time together. People need to be communicating. And I think we miss out on a lot of that when we spend a lot of time just watching something.
Right. And also, I think the internet can be even a greater danger than even a television, because you have instant access to all kinds of bad stuff. And so I encourage people to, like in our family, we use Mac computers usually for the internet, and we set up an internet password to where only usually mom and the girls have access to the open internet, but everybody else has like pre-described, there's like 50 or 75 different websites that the kids can go to that are like focused on the family and other things like that, that are safe websites. But I think the internet is one of the greatest inventions in our lifetime, but yet it also has a power to destroy men's souls especially. And so I encourage people to set up safety nets, maybe like even Be Safe and different things like that can help to keep the harmful effects of the internet away from the kids. And from your marriage
and your family, yeah.
Right.
And so you initially then, you decided to hold off on having kids, and then had to change your heart, really felt convicted that
yes, God we had been married about 4 years, actually well, a little over 3 years, and Michelle went off the birth control pill, and we decided to have her first child. And so Michelle got pregnant, we had her first son, Josh, and then she went back on the pill, and then she ended up getting pregnant while she was on the pill, and the pill actually caused a miscarriage.
And at that point, we were devastated. Here we were parents holding this one baby in our arms, enjoying the joy of being a parent, and then realizing that with our own hands, our own lack of knowledge, we had allowed our baby to be destroyed. And that was devastating for us as Christians. And we just began to search the scriptures and pray. And we found that God says that children are a blessing and a gift and a reward from Him. And we got on our knees and we just said, Father, we give this area of our life to You. Give us a love for children like You love children. And Lord, we want to receive whatever gifts You want to give us. And right after that, God blessed us with twins.
And then another one. And we got up to about 7 children, and we thought, how in the world can we handle any more? Because we had all these little children running around, and we thought we were overwhelmed, and we didn't know how we could even provide financially, and it was a scary point. But yet we, in faith, we kept going, and we really believed that this was God's will for our lives.
And I think I want to say here, I interject this often. I heard someone wisely say, don't question what God has shown you in the light when you're walking through a dark time. And so sometimes things get tough and it is hard, but don't question in the darkness what God has shown you in the light. And I think that and many other verses and scriptures carried us through those challenging times when they were all little and we were the only ones that could tie their shoes and buckle up those car seats and all those days when it was quite challenging.
Huh. So you obviously recognize how difficult it is to rear kids in our culture today, and you know what's out there, and really realizing that, you know, not only do you have the responsibility for the children that you have, but then, you know, as they move towards marriage and as they have their own kids and stuff like that, what do you think has been your biggest challenge in kind of really working with the Lord and saying, what are we called to really instill in our children to make sure that they are God-honoring adults when they finally leave our home?
Mm. Right. I think as parents, one of the most difficult things is keeping up with our children's hearts. Mm. And in Deuteronomy, it talks about teaching your children when you get up in the morning, when you sit down, when you walk by the way, when you go to bed at night. And so we're supposed to be training our children all the time. And so as a couple, we committed actually to homeschooling because we wanted to be around our children all the time and be able to keep up with their hearts. And I went to a Christian school, Michelle went to public school, and we're really thankful for both of those. But yet for us, we purposed to spend time with our children and make sure that
God was the center of our education and our family. And so I think that was really a great commitment that we made early on when our first baby was only 8 months old. We saw that vision of homeschooling. And then I think, as Dad was saying, keeping the hearts of our children probably is the greatest one thing as a parent that we see as a challenge. And yet, I've heard someone else say, a preacher said, whoever praises your children will have their heart. And I thought, okay, Lord, I want to have their heart. So Father, help me to find things that I can praise them for. And we have 49 character qualities on our website at duggerfamily.com. years ago when our children were young, I posted those on the refrigerator and I said, we're going to learn these. We're going to memorize. What does it mean to be responsible? What does it mean to have initiative? How can I be joyful when I really don't feel like it? And all of those character qualities and those definitions were right before our eyes. And I would choose when I felt like crying. I would say, okay, Lord, I'm going to smile through my tears. I'm going to kiss that child, smile at him, love on him, and then I'm going to praise them. Wow, you showed such initiative when you went and you took out that trash, and that wasn't even your job. I am so encouraged. You really made all of us happy because the trash can's not overflowing anymore. You know, and finding something good to praise them for, and we purposed to praise them 10 times more than we correct them. Now, we're not always perfect at doing that, but that's been a goal. And then I think two other things that we really have tried to pour into our children. I say this to them. I say, you will be a success in life no matter what vocation you go into if you will do these two things. Number one, you love God with your whole heart, soul, mind, and strength. And number two, you love others more than you love yourself. Really, you put others first in your loving them and reaching out and looking for ways to serve others. And if you do those two things, you're going to be a success in life.
And I would also encourage parents to make sure they cleanse their home of things, because the world wants to slip in all different directions, everything from videos to, we already talked about television or internet, but all kinds of things.
Magazines, music. What you hear, what you see, whatever you take in is going to come back out. And so what you know, garbage in, garbage out. But if you keep putting things that are good, whatever is true, whatever is right, whatever is lovely, a good report, let your mind dwell on these things. And so Jana was just saying to me, she said, you know, Easter and all that, thinking about that. You know, the Jewish people, they will cleanse their homes of leaven and get all that out. She said, it would be so neat if that would be our one time a year, Mama, Daddy, if we would just go through and have everybody go through their stuff and go through our bookshelf and go through all of our house and just go through and cleanse anything that really is not good and just get rid of it.
A big burn party.
Yeah, or something. And I thought, that's not a bad idea.
Huh. So, Jim Bob, what would you say on the in the area of like responsibility and maturity then? So, obviously, cultivating a heart for God, a heart for others. There's so much in our culture today that, you know, we talk about adolescence and it's kind of this free form time that wasn't even around generations ago. But now we have this adolescence and now it's kind of expanded into this adult essence where we see young adults kind of spending years finding themselves, kind of in this limbo, finding difficulty really maturing. What are you really doing to teach your adult children? Of course, Josh now off on his own, to really say, you know, here's what it looks like to be a man of God. And these are the ages and the stages and the appropriateness of getting there.
That's interesting. I just heard a report that said that they've moved adolescents now from 18 years old up to 30 years old. And so it's amazing that that's the mentality. They think, oh, it's all right just to be irresponsible until you're 30 and then all of a sudden start your life. But we try to teach our children from the time they're young that they need to be responsible for their own actions. And it may be the little one, we try to teach them jurisdictions. Each child in our family has these jurisdictions that they're responsible for, which are like responsibilities. And it may be like James does the upstairs trash. Jason does the downstairs trash. A team of the boys help do the dishes. Some of them help do laundry or.
And I can give just a real practical application of teaching responsibility because I realize my little guys, some of them get distracted, and my heart for them, I say to them, you know what? You're going to grow up to be a husband and a dad someday, maybe. And you're going to be a good husband and a good dad because you're going to be responsible. And even though you don't feel like getting up to go to work in the morning, you're going to do it anyway. And even though somebody is hateful to you at work, you're going to stick it out and you're going to have a right response, whether you feel like it or not, because it's the right thing to do. And so the reason that you need to take out this trash upstairs is because your whole family suffers when you don't. Mm-hmm. Your sisters start groaning and going, oh, James, the trash can stinks. Where are you? Please come and do your job. And I realize that when we have to remind you that we are not encouraging you to be responsible. That's not responsibility. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to help you. Every time that somebody says something about a trash can, I'm just going to put a little sticker on there that says $1. And if we're going to be your maid service, then that's okay. We'll get paid for it. But we'll charge you $1 for that trash can that you forgot to take out. And boy, it's amazing how quick the maid loses her job really fast, because they begin to realize this is my jurisdiction, my responsibility, and I can do this.
Hmm. They become really responsible, and they start remembering to do it themselves versus having somebody wait till somebody reminds them.
Yeah.
And so I think continuing with that thought, like Josh now has his own business. He has a car business, and he buys and sells cars, mm-hmm. and buys a lot of like new car trade-ins and resells them. And over the years, I think it started off not just with him starting his own business now, but what happened was back when Josh and John were young, they went and dug some rocks up out of the backyard, and they said, "Daddy, can we sell these rocks?" And so I said, "Sure." So they put a sign up out by the street and put a little bench on the table or on the front porch, and it said rocks for sale. And I think we had Aunt Frieda came by, and she said, "Hey, can I buy some of your rocks?" And she ended up buying 10 of their rocks from them for $1. And I think that may be the only 10 they sold, but yet it taught them marketing and taught them responsibility and to clean things up and to try to do their best to sell them. And then from there, Josh and John moved to reselling bicycles. They had some old bicycles that they fixed up and resold out of the front yard. And we gave them the freedom to go and to do ventures like that, which might have sounded ridiculous to some people, but yet the kids learned how to do their own little businesses and how to maybe the rock business failed, but then their bicycle business did a little better. And now Josh has his car business that's taken off, and he's learned that, you know, if you pay too much for something, it's hard to resell. Or if you buy something that needs too much work, it's hard to, you know, there's a lot of expenses fixing something up. And so it's been great. And John has a towing business, and he's been towing cars around and then helping Josh with towing and working on the cars. And so it's neat to see our children working together. Our older girls and John have become volunteer firemen. Wow. And they have gone through first responder classes and have learned a lot of medical training. And I have a feeling some of our daughters maybe want to go into like becoming midwives or nurses. And they're right now going through a College Plus program to get a college degree. And so it'll be interesting to see what the Lord does with their lives in the future.
Wow. Well, you have a book called A Love That Multiplies, and I want you two to just talk briefly as we wrap up about, you said it talks a lot about really a vision that you're casting for your girls. Specifically, there's an element of that about just moving towards a godly marriage, what to look for, what your hopes are for them and their dreams. What would be your advice to young adults in finding that godly partner and really looking towards a godly marriage?
Well, I think this was really motivated even more when Jana came to me one day. And of course, she's 21, mm-hmm. and so she could very easily be married soon. I was before that time.
If we find a godly guy out there.
That's right.
Send your resumes in.
Yeah. So anyway, she came to me and she said, "Mom, what would be the one quality, the number one quality that you would say I should look for in my future mate?" And I said, "Give me some time to pray about that one, Jana." So a few days later, I came back to her and I said, "You know what it is that I love so much about your father? The one quality that stands out to me about him. I know that he loves God. And he loves God so much that he will bear his heart with me and share his deepest struggles, his worst failures, his greatest temptations, and have me pray with him about it. And I think when he is willing to come and bear his heart to me in that way, I feel like that shows me that he has a heart that wants to do what's right before God. He's not perfect. He makes mistakes. But that he is desiring to follow the Lord. That gives me security in my relationship with him, in knowing that God, number one, is who he's going to answer to. And then he wants to love me like Christ loved the church. And I think that's laying down his life. When he's sleeping in the middle of the night and that baby starts crying, He will go get that baby out of the crib and bring it to me so that I can feed the baby. He changes the diaper and helps feed that baby if it's able to drink out of a bottle at that point. I think I've watched him die to himself many times when he would rather sleep or would rather do something else. He'll go shopping with me, believe it or not, when he doesn't like to shop. And those are the ways that I have seen him show that unconditional love that God says that a husband should do for his wife by laying down his life for her.
And in our new book, we're going to share just a lot of criteria. One chapter is called Do the Duggars Date? And we start off talking about, we believe in dating, but it's for Michelle and I. It's like, once you get married, then you should date. But we don't believe as far as just going around.
And our daughter, Jill, explained it very well. She said that dating, the whole dating idea is you go around kind of experimenting with people, and you don't really have marriage in mind because you're not really even on that level of thinking. And yet you just want to kind of play around for a little bit and just see if you really like them or not. And then you go off in your heart, you're giving away parts of your heart that way. And she said, I feel like that's kind of preparing seeds of divorce if you're thinking that you can just play around like that mm-hmm. with people's hearts and emotions. Because really, if you wait for the one that God has for you, you can rate and figure out, is this really got the character qualities that I'm looking for? Is this maybe not the right direction they're going that I'm going? And not that it's wrong, just not the same direction.
So our girls have came up with a list of kind of a sample list in our book that we put together of 10 qualities that they would like in a future spouse. And then there's 10 qualities that they don't want in a future spouse. And so I guess you have to get the book to find out what those are. But
that's great. Well, it's coming out in June. Again, it's called A Love That Multiplies. The Duggars are part of 19 Kids and Counting, and it has been such a privilege to talk to you too and invite you into the Boundless family in a sense and have you introduced to our folks, so many young adults who are wanting to have a godly marriage and family someday and are moving in that direction and trying to get mentors to make that happen. And so it's just great to see a good example of a couple that, like you said, Michelle on the front end, maybe hasn't always done everything perfectly, isn't trying to set themselves up as being some kind of standard of perfection, but who really just seeks the Lord in all things. And it's possible, and we want to root for good, godly marriages and families in the process. So thank you both for being a part of this.
Thank you
for having us today.
Thank you.
My heart is racing, mindful of questions. Bound by these chains, I can't go on. I've lost my way, searching for answers. Where can I go? Is it over? Whoever you are, wherever you've been, it don't matter to him. This is love.
Well, hey, everyone. I am here to open up this week's inbox, and I'm with Danny Huerta here.
Thanks
in the studio.
Thanks for having me here, Lisa.
Oh, it's so good to have you again. Yes. Yeah. So always fun to have you. He is one of our counselors here at Focus on the Family. So make sure, we've told you before, to check out the info, the resources, and the help that Focus has by going to focusonthefamily.com or by calling our main line, 1-800, the letter A and the word family. And including if you need a counseling referral, that's a great way to just kind of give the scoop, and then you can be directed to one of our counselors
that.
So, yes. But we're going to go ahead, because we just take counselors when we can get you guys too here at the Boundless Show.
You invite us and we come.
We do.
And we appreciate
we like
it.
To say we invite you, and we're pretty much like, can you just get on down to the studio here and answer this? Because you all write us questions and we want them to be answered for you. So, Danny, we've got a good one for you today. This is going to be good. Hopefully this will be just, you know, you can give some just frank advice here, because I think this is helpful.
It's going to be a good question to answer. I think a lot of people will relate to it.
Yeah. All right. Well, this girl is saying, my wedding is coming up soon and my fiance's friends want to throw him a bachelor party. They said to leave all the details to them, but I'm worried. Most of his friends are not Christians, and actually my fiance has only been a Christian for a little over 2 years. I trust him, but I'm not sure if I trust his friends. I hear a lot about what can go on at these events. Any suggestions on how to broach the subject with him and or his friends?
Well, this one is... I guess my question would be, do you feel comfortable enough to broach the subject with your fiance? And this I guess, is the first test, the first big test of communication, of being able to bring up something that is otherwise maybe, just maybe uncomfortable. But it's important. She obviously, this particular person that is writing the question is wanting to voice her opinion and her concern. She's anxious, and rightfully so. Her fiance is potentially going to make some poor choices the night before the wedding. And this, we know that usually it's a very sexual thing that occurs the night before. So with the friends doing this, I would recommend that you talk to your fiance first, approach him first, and you can talk to the friends as well and just say, hey, I'd really like for you guys to honor this marriage, the marriage vows. I want it to start off well, and you guys can come alongside of us, and this is how you can help. Have a fun time, but please keep it clean. Have a good time, though.
Yeah.
And maybe she can come up with some other ideas. Maybe not controlling it, but some ideas that she would be all right with. Maybe doing some, I don't know, glow-in-the-dark bowling. I don't know, you could do paintball or something that is, maybe takes them back a few years in their youth, mm-hmm. but doesn't have to be sexual.
Yeah, and or inappropriate. Right. I think it's interesting how, because I've talked to a number of Christians where they have done stuff that's traditionally done at bachelor or bachelorette parties, and they kind of do fall under that, you know, almost the guise of, well, you know, this is just kind of how it's done. It's just kind of crazy. We're just being crazy this one night, but almost like checking their faith at the door, you know, for mm-hmm. the time yeah. being, you know, and saying, and not, you know, not anything, it wouldn't even have to be anything uber inappropriate, but, you know, I've had a lot of friends, I think there's almost the perception that even among Christian circles that it is okay to do this for a bachelor or a bachelorette party, and it's kind of like a pass that you're given for that one night, and mm-hmm. it's kind of the traditional way to do things, so, oh, okay, and I'm not talking like necessarily strippers or anything, but I've had friends that apparently had no qualms about going out and getting drunk or doing, you know, just walking right. the streets, doing crazy games that are probably inappropriate. I've seen that happen a lot. And so you're saying that mm-hmm. it's probably good to talk to the fiance and the friends in light of that and maybe come up with some concrete ideas for mm-hmm. what to do, is what you're saying.
Yeah, you know, it's going to put the fiance is going to need to be really strong. If she just approaches the fiance, this is going to be the first test of, do I honor my potential wife or do I make my friends happy? Mm-hmm. It puts him in a very uncomfortable spot, mm-hmm. But a very important spot, because he's going to have to make that call with his family. He's going to have to cleave to his wife and at times maybe be uncomfortable with his family, putting boundaries there, boundaries with friends that, you know, I can't get together. My wife and I are going out to, you know, we're going to go out to dinner tonight or we have other plans. This is going to be the first test to those boundaries. So maybe she gives the chance to the fiance. She gives him a chance mm-hmm. That approaches him, broaches the subject. And then from there, if it's something she still feels concerned about and wants to back up her fiance, she can go to the friend and say, hey, guys, I know you guys want to have fun. This is traditionally, if you looked in history, people love that bachelor party. And it can be an exciting one because you get a green card to do just about anything. Mm-hmm. I really would appreciate you guys to just honor my request here. I want my husband to not look back on this with shame, but yeah. to really have a good time with you guys.
Well, I think it's a great opportunity for him as well as her in backing him up to honor not only their marriage and not only each other, but to honor the Lord. Because ultimately, mm-hmm. it's a personal conviction issue to sure. say, you know, this is not behavior that's in keeping with who I am as a believer, whether or not I'm a newish believer, but to really draw that line and say, you know what, this is not appropriate, and this is, and we can still have fun, and I want to have something that I can look back on and be proud of and say mm-hmm. that I had fun and I'm not, you know, ashamed to have participated in. So
yeah, it's a great foundation. I think I'm still trying to think back to my bachelor party. Uh-huh. That was a few years ago.
And did I think, like, I think, play Scrabble, or what'd you do?
Yeah, I play a little Boggle. Okay. And then, no, we played, we actually did, I think we did paintball.
Oh, okay.
And that's maybe legit. That's why it popped in. It was something, I think it was paintball that we did. I'm not 100% sure. It was paintball, bowling, one of those things where we just said, hey, let's just go out and have fun. And they really respected that, even though they wanted to do some other things. So, yeah.
And I've known guys that have done like golfing or gone to the driving range or gone shooting or something like that. Not shooting people.
Football game or basketball game.
Yeah, something like that. That could be really fun. Cool.
Lots of ideas. Maybe on the website, you guys could throw in some ideas for bachelor parties.
Well, yeah, we're going to have to, on the blog, we'll have some people give some of their ideas. Some of the best ones you've ever been to that you felt really were cool, but still, you know, kept your convictions
perfect.
In check.
Perfect. So I think that's good. Check that out.
Yeah. So I think everyone can see here, after listening to our roundtable this week, that this is a great example of putting conviction in action, something where a person is going to have to take a stand and recognize what, as far as personal conduct, whether moral or ethical or whatever, just a wisdom issue, is a good thing to do versus not a good thing to do. And I think it's a great example of taking a stand for the Lord and being a great example to friends in the process. So thanks so much, Danny.
Thank you.
For being part of that. Okay, well, that is it for this week's show. As always, we want to hear from you. Write to us, editor@boundless.org, with your own conundrums. Or you can even respond to this question with, like we said, your questions and comments. You'll also hear and have the opportunity to weigh in on the blog and on Facebook and elsewhere. So make sure that you're doing that. That is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.